Stay tuned for one of the most fascinating programs you'll ever hear as we explore the strange and mysterious world of the paranormal and UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dealing with extraordinary claims of the paranormal on Earth and beyond. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, the controversies are real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of parapsychology, futuristic science, and the UFO enigma. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss some of the most fascinating and strange subjects around. Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of the Paranet Continuum, home of common sense, no-nonsense paranormal talk radio. We got a really interesting program tonight. We're going to cover a couple of interesting topics. One of them is we're going to look at a cutting-edge program that will soon allow you to download signals from space onto your home computer. It's called SETI at Home, and it looks like a mixture of science and fun. We're going to have that on the program tonight. We're also going to talk about, later in the hour, about psychotronics. We're going to have a guest joining us about that knows quite a bit about the subject of psychotronics and what the government is doing with it. But first, we've got some news items to cover. First of all, this is kind of interesting. The CIA turns 50, and officials see its demise. This is contributed by Tim Weiner of the New York Times. On July 26, 1947, with memories of the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor still fresh and fear of a Cold War rising, President Harry Truman signed the law that gave birth to the Central Intelligence Agency. 50 years on, the elite CIA has become a pariah in American culture, a prisoner of its public history as a spy agency. The evil that spooks... excuse me, I'm getting a little frog in my throat. The evil that spooks do lives after them. The good is interred by secrecy. The agency insists that it has scored dazzling successes over the decades, but prefers not to discuss them, and so people remember the mafia hitmen hired to kill Fidel Castro, the coups gone bad, the rebel groups seduced and abandoned, the drunken scoundrel Aldrich Ames. Now, in sadness and anger, several of the men who led the agency through the Cold War are saying that the CIA's heart itself is failing, that its clandestine service to the nation may be nearing the end of its useful life. The agency has been on a losing streak ever since it won the Cold War. Its last two directors, R. James Woolsey Jr. and John M. Deutsch, blamed the culture of the CIA, which in victory lost its... Milt Beard, the agency's last chief of Soviet operations, said in a recent interview, "The collapse of our enemy ensured our own demise." And of course, we know that the KGB also went through several metamorphoses over its history, so I don't look for this to be anything interesting. Let's see what else we have here tonight. We've got an article from the Aviation Week in Space Technology from August the 11th, Unnatural Acts, it's titled. In a recent CIA publication, National Reconnaissance Office historian Gerald K. Haynes claims that during the Cold War, the Air Force knowingly attributed many UFO reports triggered by high-flying U-2s and SR-71s to natural phenomena such as ice crystals and temperature inversions. Well, not so, says one leading UFO debunker, Aviation Week's own Philip J. Class. I don't know if I'd be too proud to call him our own. In reality, Class says if a spy plane prompted a UFO report, a sighting was categorized unidentified. From the first U-2 flight in 1955 through the Gary Powers shoot-down in 1960, the United States Air Force attributed only 0.5% of sightings to mirages and inversions or clouds and contrails, while 2.3% were listed as unidentified. During the 60s, before the SR-71 was made public, 1% of all UFO reports were chalked up to such natural phenomena, while 3% were unidentified. Interesting, one of them mentioned something, too, if you noticed when I read that article. Gregory Haynes is the guy that wrote that CIA article that came out a little bit ago. You notice it said he was with the National Reconnaissance Office? Isn't that another one of those super secret agencies that no one even officially acknowledged until a few years ago, and we don't even know what they do? Isn't it kind of interesting that he writes about UFOs? Okay, scientists scoff at alleged chunk from alien craft, from the Associated Press, Albuquerque. Scientists say a silicone chunk touted as an unearthly scientific evidence that a UFO crash near Roswell 50 years ago could have been manufactured in any college chemistry lab. But Russell Vernon Clark, the University of California San Diego chemist, who claims the material is of extraterrestrial origin, stood by his claim, although acknowledging that he cannot be 100% certain. In retrospect, with 2020 hindsight, I would have preferred to have more work done, but I stand by my conclusions. Vernon Clark said that from his home in Encinitas, California, near San Diego. He said his conclusion was, and is, that the material appears to be of extraterrestrial origin and appears to be manufactured because of the non-naturally occurring isotopes we found, both the major and the trace elements. Those isotopes were from the elements silicon, germanium, zinc, nickel, and silver, he said. Vernon Clark had revealed his conclusions July 4th during a Roswell news conference staged as part of the 50th anniversary celebrations of an alleged alien crash in New Mexico. Now, since that news conference, Vernon Clark's work has been subjected to a criticism. Scientists studying Vernon Clark's data circulated on the Internet said it has serious flaws. There's just a number of huge mistakes in that report, holes big enough to run a dump truck through, said Albuquerque physicist Dave Thomas. Among problems cited by Thomas were claims that the alleged 50-year-old spacecraft debris contained detectable amounts of the element germanium-75, a substance so radioactive, scientists say it would decay into other elements in less than a day. Scientists also said the claim the material would be extraterrestrial because of its unusual characteristics just doesn't hold up. They said its ingredients could be purchased from chemical supply houses and easily mixed in any university chemistry lab. At the news conference, TV producer Paul Davids told reporters the material came from an unidentified person. Of course. Well, who claimed to have gotten it from the 1947 crash. I don't know. We should not believe anything until we have a little bit more substantial proof and somebody that will come forward and stand up and be counted. Okay. Kind of in a contrast to this, oddball theories of plus from Casey Cole, Los Angeles Times. In late April, two physicists announced in a prestigious physics journal that empty space spiraled like a corkscrew around some previously unknown axis, and that due to this mysterious turn of things, the universe had an upside down and a downside. This meant, in effect, that the universe contained a kind of North Star that oriented the cosmos. The finding upset many cherished ideas, including Einstein's theory of gravity and the deeply held belief that everyone looks, space looks exactly the same. Other scientists were skeptical, of course. Nevertheless, the story appeared on the front pages of many newspapers. Researchers responded with a half dozen rebuttals on the Internet, poking holes in both the scientific data and the analysis. By week's end, it seemed the idea that the universe knows up from down was history. Some suggest the episode is an example of the way science ought to work, regardless of the validity of this particular study. It offered a glimpse inside the well-functioning, if messy, gears of real science in which wrong ideas are as important to the health of the enterprise as the right ones. The public gets confused, said Harvard University astronomer Sally Baliunas, because science is supposed to have hard rules, but these hard rules are applied by real people. It's an important part of science that the public doesn't see. As the late Carl Sagan liked to point out, science requires a strange mating of two contradictory tendencies, a willingness to consider even the most bizarre ideas, and at the same time, a most rigorous skepticism requiring hard evidence to back up every claim. That's kind of interesting coming out of Dr. Carl Sagan, isn't it? They won't even give UFOs airtime, you know, and they're saying right here that they should. I wish they'd get their act together too, I guess. Well, okay. We come back from break. We're going to talk about SETI at home. Kind of an interesting concept, I think, and you're going to enjoy my guest, Dan Wertheimer, who's going to join us from UC Berkeley. We'll be back in just a moment with that. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum. Get ready to copy down some computer addresses. I'm going to tell you how you can plug into the oldest and most reliable news and information service on UFOs and the paranormal on the entire planet. It's the Paranet Information Services Worldwide Network. First of all, check out our page on the World Wide Web. It provides you hot links to other UFO and paranormal sites, along with audio clips from recent Paranet radio shows and much more. Type in www.paranet.org/paranet/. If you're a subscriber to America Online, CompuServe, or the Microsoft Network, you can access the 7 Paranet news groups covering UFOs, metaphysics, parapsychology, and more. Just select the Internet News Group function from your online service and search for Paranet. You can also send us email at this address, paranet@paranet.org. So, don't accept one of these and substitutes. The name is Paranet, the world's most important communications network.
Pilots depend on accurate, timely information, both in the cockpit and on the ground. Skyway Publications helps with both. The Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide provides convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that cater to pilots. These are free, pocket-sized guides with information on large and small airports nationwide, along with technical information, fuel and airport services, and businesses that can make life easier for pilots. Keep in mind, it's free. Check your local airport for the Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide, or call area 970-669-1800. Call Skyway today and find out how the guide can also be a financial opportunity for you. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Check your local airport or call Skyway at 970-669-1800.
Some of the things you'll hear on this program are simply unbelievable. But what if they're for real? Keep an open mind and stay tuned to the Paranet Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-836-2009. I got my voice back. Weird kind of little frog at the beginning of the program I had there. Okay, we're going to talk about SETI at home for one thing, but my guest tonight is the director of the UC Berkeley SETI program, SERINDIP. It stands for the Search for Extraterrestrial Radio Emissions from Nearby Developed Intelligent Populations. Now, this group represents an ongoing scientific research effort that has been aimed at detecting radio signals from extraterrestrial civilizations. The project is the world's only piggyback SETI system, operating alongside simultaneously conducted conventional radio astronomy observations. Now, SERINDIP is currently piggybacking on the 1,000-foot dish at Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico, the largest telescope, radio telescope in the world. It's my pleasure tonight to welcome from Berkeley, California, Dan Wertheimer. Good evening, Dan.
Good evening, Michael.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
My pleasure.
Now, what is, first of all, give us a little bit of a background on what SETI is.
SETI is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and most scientists in the SETI field are looking for other civilizations. And right now, the only way Earthlings have of looking for other civilizations is if they have advanced technology. We can't detect trees or small animals. We have to look for a civilization that would have advanced technology. The hope is that they'll be sending radio or television or radar signals or something that we might be able to detect with our radio telescopes.
Now, this idea of doing this has been kind of kicked around and talked about for probably many years. What's the year that SETI originated?
About 30 years ago, Frank Drake conducted the first search looking for radio signals. And since that time, there have been much more powerful searches. But I believe Earthlings are just still scratching the surface. We're just getting started. We're just learning the technology and the tricks. We're just starting to look at different frequencies and different parts of the sky. But what's exciting about SETI is the technology is changing so rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
It's grown by a factor of a million since I've been doing it for 20 years. And I believe that in the long run, if there are civilizations out there, we'll be able to detect them.
Now, what is the status of SETI these days? Have they received ever received anything anomalous or interesting, or you know, what's the status today?
Nothing's been found. There's no evidence of other civilizations out there. But most astronomers do think the universe is teeming with life. There's planets out there going around other stars, some with the right temperature, the right conditions for life. And we also know that the oldest rocks you can find on Earth show life. It didn't take long for life to get started on this planet. So we think it probably doesn't take long for life to get started on other planets.
Okay. 1-800-836-2009 is the number to call in. 1-800-836-2009. I'm talking with Dan Wertheimer, who is the director of the UC Berkeley SETI program, Serendip, which is the search for extraterrestrial radio emissions from nearby developed intelligent populations. Now, the thing that attracted us to you, Dan, was we heard on NPR a discussion that you had regarding SETI at home. Now, what is SETI at home? And I understand it's going to be about a year before anything of this nature is ready, but what is it?
Well, the problem with looking for radio signals is that there are a lot of unknowns. We don't know where to point the telescope. We don't know what frequencies to listen to. We don't know what kind of patterns, whether it's AM or FM or pulsed. And there are a lot of unknowns. So we need a lot of computing power to look for all these different possible signals. And so we built these giant machines that have a lot of computing power. The one that we have now and at the world's largest telescope has a couple hundred billion operations per second. But we'd like even more computing power so we could look at more channels and look for more patterns. So a way to tap into that computing power is to ask individuals to help us by using their computers at home or in the office or in the schools. And we can ask them to download a little piece of the data over the net, a little part of the sky that we would assign to them, and ask them to use their computers to help us analyze this data.
That sounds like a really interesting mixture of science and some novelty and fun.
Yeah, it's a rather ambitious computing project, and we hope to get 100,000 people involved in this project. The way it works is it'll work like a screensaver. This program doesn't exist right now. We're still developing it. We hope to have it ready next year sometime. But it works like a screensaver that when your computer's not busy, say when you're done using your word processor or something and the computer detects that you haven't used it for a few minutes,
mm-hmm.
the computer will automatically turn over to this screensaver program which analyzes the data that you've downloaded on the net.
That's very interesting. Which telescope does it use? How much of the sky is going to be looked at with these telescopes?
We're using the world's largest radio telescope in Puerto Rico. It's called Arecibo, the Arecibo Radio Telescope. And as you mentioned, it's 1,000 feet in diameter. It holds 10 billion bowls of cornflakes. We haven't actually tried that. And right now, we analyze the data from it, but we don't do a great job. We don't cover all the frequencies we'd like. We don't look at all the patterns we'd like to. And our plan now is to record the data that comes from this telescope and then play it back to individuals and schools and businesses on the net, little bit by little bit, to ask them to help us analyze this data.
How much data have you guys so far received or gotten from your program at the university?
We've examined 150 trillion radio signals so far. And that sounds like a lot, but it's still just a small fraction of what we'd like to cover to do a thorough job of looking for these possible radio signals.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious, what kind of equipment, like a computer, what kind of computer is required to do something like this?
Well, we build specialized hardware. There are 40 different processors, each doing these mathematical computations to look for signals. But it's like having a bunch of different radios, each one tuned to a different frequency,
mm-hmm.
and each one having a signal strength meter that you're watching. And if you do find at a particular channel or a particular frequency a strong signal, that's what we're interested in.
So you're looking for strong signals that may have what in them? Something intelligible, or like would it be? Would we maybe pick up an advertising or a commercial or something from someplace else?
Well, our first task would be just to find a signal at some frequency coming from some star. And right now, we're not trying to decode the signal or try to find out what the information is. Now, that the signal may turn out to be an interplanetary radar or a navigational beacon, or it might be some kind of communication that's leaking off our planet. You know that the Earth has been sending off signals now for 50 years. The early television shows, I Love Lucy,
right.
Ed Sullivan, left the Earth 50 years ago, went out into space traveling at the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
They've now gone past a few thousand stars. But maybe that other civilizations have some kind of communication that leaks off their planet, or if we're very lucky, they're sending a signal to us on purpose, saying, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Here's our encyclopedia, here's our Library of Congress, here's how to get on the galactic internet.
What frequency are they? What frequency do you think that they might be likely there?
Well, there are preferred frequencies for interstellar communication in the microwave region of the spectrum. But if they're not trying to do interstellar communication, if they're just kind of communicating on their own for their own purposes and that stuff leaks off their planet, there's no real preferred frequency. So that makes the job very difficult. If they're sending a message on purpose to us, then they might pick a frequency between 1 and 10 gigahertz that goes through the interstellar medium very well.
Okay. All right, hold that thought. We're going to go to another break. When we come back, I want to ask you about what happens if some sort of a pattern is detected, or, you know, what are we going to do with it? 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. My guest is Dan Wertheimer. He's the director of the Serendip Project at UC Berkeley. Very interesting thing, SETI at home. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin. You're listening to the Paranet Continuum. We'll be right back.
We can rebuild it. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's best personal computer just for you. Better, stronger, faster than it was before. We have a stark ambition to make your computer everything you need it to be. You've had it in your dreams, now get it in your computer. Better monitors, stronger, bigger hard drives, faster processors and modems. You can have the technology the government can't cover up at prices far below what the Defense Department pays for a paperclip. Call Stark Ambition today at 303-809-0274 or visit our website at www.starknet.com. Call for the best prices on components, new systems, service and repair on single units and networks. On the information superhighway, it's better to travel with a nerd. So get yours today and put our Stark Ambition to work for you. Call Stark Ambition 303-809-0274 or see our price list on the web at www.starknet.com.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Visa and MasterCard accepted. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services in MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read. The mystery of UFOs, strange lights in the sky, crashed saucers, alien abductions, secret military projects, government cover-ups, hoaxes, and frauds. We cover it all on the Paranet Continuum. Now back to your host, Michael Corbin.
1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. Again, joining us from Berkeley, California is Dan Wertheimer, who is the director of the UC Berkeley Project Serendip, and it's in a year's time, approximately a year, they are going to be able to provide what they call SETI at home. Now, Dan, I've always been fascinated with SETI myself and radio in general. I understand several years ago that a protocol was worked out to deal with the eventuality that some contact is made. What are they providing for?
The protocol is that we've signed on to is that if we ever do find a signal, before we make an announcement, we have to get it verified. We have to make sure that this is an interesting signal. And the verification, we could first check it out ourselves, but we also have to get a separate group at a different radio telescope with different equipment, different computer program, because it might be a prank, graduate student going to play a prank on us or something. If they can independently verify it, then the protocol says that we can send out a telegram, it's called International Astronomical Union Telegram, that goes all over the world all at once. And in that telegram, you can specify, or you have to specify the location of this thing, what star, the right ascension declination, these are the coordinates that we use, what frequency you saw it at, the kind of signal. You have to give all the information that you know about it. And at that point, you can say, possible evidence of another civilization. But you can't claim for sure at that point that it is an extraterrestrial, because it might be some kind of new natural phenomena that we haven't heard of yet.
I noticed that, well, I know that several years ago, two gentlemen, I believe they were astronomers, Cocconi and Morrison, had talked about the possibility of maybe we don't want to make contact with an alien civilization if there is one out there. Has anything ever been speculated about, you know, what might happen if that happens and it's not a friendly signal?
Well, it's there's a lot of speculation about that. It's a potential problem because, at least in our history, when an advanced civilization has come in contact with a less advanced civilization, and I should say, this is likely to be a much more advanced civilization than we are. It's going to be hard to find a civilization at our level of technology that's just barely discovered radio.
Right.
That could be a problem. And in our history, sometimes the less advanced civilization gets
wiped out.
Well, wiped out. Certainly the culture will change.
Or conquered or whatever. Yeah, sure. I agree. And,
in terms of conquering, it's extremely unlikely that another civilization is going to come eat us or use us for fuel. There are vast distances between the stars, and it would take much more fuel to get here than you'd get by just sort of visiting our planet. There's no particular resources that we have that aren't all over the universe. The Earth is not a real special place in terms of its resources.
Okay. We've got some callers. Let's take a call. We've got, let's see, Chris calling in from our affiliate KNZZ in Grand Junction, Colorado. Good evening, Chris. We can't have Chris.
I intend to join SETI and set up my own station. Seems like an extremely interesting thing to do. But what is the possibility that in the natural progression of any technological civilization, radio would be superseded by another technology within a short period of time, so any given civilization would only be on the radio a certain limited period of time, and we don't know how to intercept the advanced method of communication as of yet?
It's an excellent question. If you'd asked me 200 years ago what the right way to communicate with extraterrestrials was, I might have said smoke signals or something like that, because we didn't have radio. So if you ask me 200 years from now, it may not be radio. There may be some other better something, tachyons or something we don't know about yet that physicists haven't discovered.
I could see that the monumental problem would be it'd be like looking for a needle in a haystack, even what we're doing now.
Yeah. I'm still optimistic in the long run. So it may be that there's a better technology for communication, a new physics that we don't know about, but they may still use the old technologies as well.
Anybody calculated the likelihood of either of those positions?
it's difficult to predict what the likelihood is of other civilizations using radio. But I would argue that if we just always wait for this future technology, we'll never really know when we have the most advanced technology. It's kind of like saying, should I buy a computer now or should I wait for next year when the computers will be better or better? We might as well try what we got and what we know how to do.
Okay. Well, I agree. I'm going to do it anyhow, but I just not heard that question addressed.
Okay, well, Chris, thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Keep listening. Okay, we got one more call we'll take real quick. We've got Bob calling in from our affiliate in Kansas City, KCMO. Good evening, Bob.
Yeah. Well, you guys were just talking a second ago about what an advanced civilization might use as the as their means of communication.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I can tell you, and it's not 200 years from now. It's lasers. That's the only way you could transmit large amounts of data over many light years.
Dan, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, in fact, there are SETI astronomers that think that are looking for laser signals, and Charlie Towns, who invented the laser, just gave an interesting lecture about how to search for laser pulses, and it's an excellent idea, and there are people looking for signals in the infrared and optical, as well as the radio.
Okay, well, why are you still using radio when if you do hear a signal, it's going to be all broken up? Like, SETI has made contacts before, but they weren't able to confirm them because they only lasted a few minutes, and they couldn't tell whether it was ours or not. So if we did hear a signal, we wouldn't know it.
The kind of signal that we're looking for is something that repeats. We've never found any signals. There have been a few claims of signals that people said were extraterrestrials, but I think that's all been radio frequency interference, planes flying over, satellites flying over. There's always a problem with interference that's made on Earth, as there would be looking for light pulses as well. But there's really no evidence of other civilizations. Lasers are certainly a possibility. The reason that we look for radio is because it is the best thing to travel between the stars. There's a lot of dust in the galaxy, and it absorbs visible light. Also, radio, it doesn't take very much energy. If you want to send a word, a telegram to a distant star, it costs only about a dime, a word. In the optical or the infrared wavelengths, it costs much more.
Yes, but the amount, you can only transmit so much data, and it's lost as it travels away from the source.
Yep, both radio and optical, it's the same kind of stuff, as you know. It's electromagnetic waves, and they both get weaker as they travel out with exactly the same proportions. But there may be reasons to use laser beams instead of perhaps if an extraterrestrial is not interested in the energy costs, which I was arguing, if you're interested in energy costs, then radio is the most efficient. But if you're interested in a small system or a low-weight system, perhaps they put it in space or something like that, then lasers might be the right thing. So people are looking for laser pulses.
Okay, Bob, thank you. That'll wrap it up for that. Let's take one more quick call before we go to break, if you will. Dan, here we go. We've got Larry calling in from our affiliate in Boise, Idaho, KIDO. Good evening, Larry.
Yes, sir. I would like to know, is it reasonable to assume that we will not be visited by people from other planets? Those distances are simply too great, but the communication that we have will be through radio or at best through some robot. That is it within the realm of possibility for people to travel those distances to get to our planet?
It's impossible with the physics that we understand. It would take about 100,000 years to get to the nearest star, and it takes a lot of energy too. It takes thousands of years of the world's energy consumption to get to the stars. So it would have to be an incredibly advanced civilization. Communication is much more likely between the stars than spaceflight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Larry. Okay, real quick, Dan, with about a minute we've got left. When is this program going to be ready, the SETI at home?
Well, we've been doing our Serendip program for 20 years, but that's with our own computers that we analyze the data. The SETI at home program, we hope, will be ready next summer, so summer of 1998.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to keep tabs on it, and when it's ready, we'll bring you back, okay?
Great.
All right. Dan, thank you very much for being on the program with us tonight. I want to thank you. We really appreciate it. Good luck. Okay, when we come back, we'll have Rod Lewis joining us. We're going to talk about psychotronics and what the government is doing with it. Be interesting. So stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum. We'll be right back. Get ready to copy down some computer addresses. I'm going to tell you how you can plug into the oldest and most reliable news and information service on UFOs and the paranormal on the entire planet. It's the Paranet Information Services Worldwide Network. First of all, check out our page on the World Wide Web. It provides you hot links to other UFO and paranormal sites, along with audio clips from recent Paranet radio shows and much more. Type in www.paranet.org/paranet/. If you're a subscriber to America Online, CompuServe, or the Microsoft Network, you can access the 7 Paranet news groups covering UFOs, metaphysics, parapsychology, and more. Just select the Internet News Group function from your online service and search for Paranet. You can also send us email at this address, paranet@paranet.org. So, don't accept wannabes and substitutes. The name is Paranet, the world's most important communications network.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Visa and MasterCard accepted. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services in MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read. Listening to the Paranet Continuum. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, there's a lot on the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned, keep an open mind, and call in. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. That was an interesting couple of segments we did with Dan Wertheimer about SETI at home, and really want to thank you for those intelligent calls we got, too. All of you listening out there that called in tonight, really enjoyed those questions. Now, we're going to move on to another subject, which is considerably darker, at least in my viewpoint. It has to do with psychotronics. And we've been hearing a lot of stuff about, psychotronics, non-lethal technologies, and mind control. And we're going to talk about it. We're going to explore the relationship between all of those things with my guest tonight. It's Dr. Rod Lewis. He's a former biomedical researcher, psychological associate, and dental surgeon. He's currently studying forensic dentistry to complement his work in investigative journalism. Now, for the past 4 years, Dr. Lewis has been publishing a journal, the Encounter Chronicles, the only known journal dedicated to scientific intelligence. His acclaimed journal has been exposing the role of the national security establishment in the creation of the New World Order in response to the knowledge of an impending global catastrophe. Now, he has scientifically investigated and reported on such topics as the UFO phenomenon, the military metaphysical complex, which is an interesting subject all of itself, biological threats, earth changes, eschatology, psychopolitics, and the cryptocracy. Dr. Lewis has augmented his credentials by enlisting in the following organizations: the Federation of American Scientists, National Association of Science Writers, Association of Investigative Reporters and Editors. There's other things there. They're very good credentials. And he's Dr. Lewis has spoken around the country on these topics and is currently working on several investigative projects, as well as his book, tentatively titled Deep Black, High Tech Knowledge and Occultism. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Rod Lewis. Good evening, Rod.
Hello, Michael.
Thanks for being on the program.
Sure.
Thank you. And I want to get started by talking about, first of all, because this is going to be kind of a short segment, and we're going to carry you over into our next hour, which is heard locally here in Denver. What is psychotronics?
Well, I don't know that there's any formal definition. My concept of it is a series of technologies or methodologies whereby you can combine electronics principally, but not solely, but principally electronics, and integrate that with certain psychological aspects of the human brain. And what you wind up doing is coming up with certain effects. For example, I noticed that you played earlier a segment from the movie Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember, in that movie, they had something called a weirding module.
Right.
Okay, the weirding module was a device that used sound to act as sort of a disruptor or a device that could cause destruction of some type.
Mm-hmm.
And you could consider that something along the lines of a psychotronic device. Now, that's fiction. Fact is, we do have psychotronic devices. They have been around for a number of years. The Russians, especially, have been very, very active in this program or in this area. But in the United States, at our national laboratories, principally Los Alamos and Sandia, there has been a considerable amount of research done on these psychotronic devices. Now, in addition, there have been a number of individuals, this is probably not widely known, but I don't know if you've had Mr. Michael Lindemann on your show before.
No.
But one of the early things that he did, he's fairly popular in ufology, but one of the first things that he was involved in, he had a device called, I think, the Hemi probe or something like that, but he had a company called Lindemann Laboratories,
mm-hmm.
and this was a psychotronic device. The famous person, Robert Monroe, who is very well known for his authoring on out-of-body experiences, used a psychotronic device called the HemiSync to help his subjects precipitate out-of-body experiences. So there's been a wide variety of these devices. Some other names are people like G. Patrick Flanagan, PhD, who came out with a device called the Neurophone. Thomas Bearden, he worked in the U.S. Army, I believe he's a retired colonel, came up with several devices. Of course, there's the infamous Colonel John Alexander, as I mentioned before, who allegedly, under the auspices of the non-lethal weapons program out at Los Alamos, developed or was working on psychotronic devices as well. So it's not something that's really that esoteric in the scientific community. It's just not something that's discussed very often. However, there is actually a U.S. Psychotronics Association, so that tells you that it does have, there are a number of people out there who do follow the subject.
Now, I notice the title of your upcoming book is Deep Black, High Technology and Occultism. I'm assuming just from that title that, and with the topic that we're going to be talking about tonight, that there is a relationship between psychotronics and even the occult or the occultism.
That's true. I really believe there is. There's much evidence to suggest that there is a link. You can look at occultism several different ways. occult just means hidden, basically, hidden mm-hmm. knowledge. Of course, we usually associate it with, you know, Satanists or Luciferians or people of that ilk. But however, you have individuals such as L. Ron Hubbard, who was very involved in that area, and people like Jack Parsons of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And, by the way, Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard were both associates of Aleister Crowley. And Aleister Crowley is very famous or infamous for his theorems on ritual magic, M-A-G-I-C-K, which is nothing but pure occultism.
Okay.
In essence, what these individuals worked on for a number of years was attempting to contact and control and manipulate what they term non-human intelligence or disembodied intelligence.
Okay, Rod, I got to interrupt you right there. I want you to hold that thought. We're going to carry that over into the next hour. Okay?
Okay.
Stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this announcement. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum.
Who says you can't get something for nothing? The Paranet catalog contains detailed descriptions of all the Paranet radio shows produced since April of 1994 and shows you how you can order them on audio cassette for as little as $5 each. Are you on the World Wide Web? You can join Paranet and get access to over 30 megabytes of text files and pictures, as well as real audio access to all of our past radio shows. Members also receive a subscription to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly magazine. The catalog shows you how to join. The Paranet catalog also has special book offers, t-shirts and sweatshirts with alien and outer space themes, and much more. And the catalog is yours free. Call now 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381 for your free copy of the Paranet catalog. That's 1-800-836-6381.
We can rebuild it. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's best personal computer just for you. Better, stronger, faster than it was before. We have a stark ambition to make your computer everything you need it to be. You've had it in your dreams, now get it in your computer. Better monitors, stronger, bigger hard drives, faster processors and modems. You can have the technology the government can't cover up at prices far below what the Defense Department pays for a paperclip. Call Stark Ambition today at 303-809-0274 or visit our website at www.starknet.com. Call for the best prices on components, new systems, service and repair on single units and networks. On the information superhighway, it's better to travel with a nerd. So get yours today and put our Stark Ambition to work for you. Call Stark Ambition 303-809-0274 or see our price list on the web at www.starknet.com. We can rebuild it.
Is the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs and the paranormal. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network on the paranormal, call us at 303-863-0484 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034.
Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And, of course, joining us for the next hour to my Denver listeners will be Rod Lewis. We're going to talk about psychotronics. It's a very interesting topic. The reason we're bringing this up is because it's that time again. We're going to be publishing another issue of the Continuum magazine, the quarterly magazine. There's going to be an article in that magazine, the upcoming magazine, that you might want to, I shouldn't say might, you really should read. Because something very interesting is developing, and that is the fact that we spent a lot of years looking for MJ-12 or looking for the existence of MJ-12. And MJ-12, as a lot of you may know, is the supposed agency that was uncovered by Stan Friedman and Bill Moore and others concerning a secret government project dealing with UFOs. I think we've been led down the wrong path. The real answers may lie with a memorandum, the Pentacle Memorandum, that was discovered by Jacques Vallée back in the 60s among Dr. J. Allen Hynek's papers. The interesting thing is that we've got some background concerning the Pentacle Memorandum and some other interesting things that Jacques Vallée has discovered over the years, well, with his close association with Dr. Hynek and Project Blue Book in the 60s. I think there is a considerable amount of data that has been missed, and I think in some ways the Pentacle Memorandum might represent part of a smoking gun. So that article is going to be in the next edition of the Continuum magazine. It's $18 a year, and you can order it with your credit card by calling 1-800-836-NET1. That's 1-800-836-6381. It's $18 a year, and again, you can use your credit card. You can also call that number to get information, a catalog, and also tapes of these programs. And, of course, you might want to get a tape for the second hour of the program tonight with Dr. Rod Lewis. You can do that also by ordering from 800-836-6381. That wraps it up for us tonight for all of my listeners on the network, and I want to thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. If you want to reach me, you can do so by calling 303-863-0484. My email address is mcorbin@dimensional.com. Until next week, this is Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.